local news, culture, and NPR.
From WJFF.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, a blood emergency. The Red Cross National Blood Inventory plummets 25% in July, and they've declared an emergency blood shortage. We'll talk to the Red Cross about the need for blood donors as record-breaking heat disrupts blood drives nationwide. Fish at Bethel Woods. The beloved jam band and its Fishhead followers come to the site of the historic Woodstock Festival for 3 days of shows. Peter Negroponte is the Bethel Woods artist in residence, and he's curating the additional bands performing at the Fish pre-show activities. We'll talk to him about all of the hoopla. Plus, the BioBit Blitz in Wayne County, and two new exhibits at the Wayne County Arts Alliance. Culture reporter Valerie Rimanzi has more. First, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Torrential rain from Tropical Storm Debbie is pouring over parts of North and South Carolina. National Hurricane Center meteorologist Robbie Berg says Debbie made landfall for a second time overnight in South Carolina.
Even though the center has made landfall, that does not downplay the big story with Debbie, which is the heavy rainfall that's expected to continue for the next day or so across portions of the Carolinas and then up into Virginia, and even extending northward into portions of Pennsylvania and New York State.
There are tornado watches posted in coastal North Carolina and Virginia. A tornado was reported overnight in Wilson, North Carolina. Some buildings were damaged. Parts of eastern Ohio continue to recover from severe storms earlier this week. The tracking site PowerOutage.us says more than a quarter of a million Ohio customers still don't have power. They're clustered around the Cleveland area. Hundreds of Silicon Valley tech investors have signed a pledge to back the Kamala Harris presidential campaign. NPR's Derek Kerr reports this comes after billionaire Elon Musk endorsed Donald Trump for president.
The group is called VCs for Kamala. It's just over a week old and has seen more than 1,000 venture capitalists sign its pledge. The group says Harris will be the more stable candidate and that stability is better for the country and better for business. It just held its first online fundraiser, getting nearly $150,000 in just 1 hour. VCs for Kamala started after Elon Musk and a handful of Silicon Valley billionaires said they supported Trump. The cohort is backing a super PAC, which has reported spent $20 million since June. The founder of VCs for Kamala, Leslie Feinzeig, says she started the group because she didn't want those billionaires speaking for the entire tech investor community. Dara Kerr, NPR News.
Donald Trump has announced he will hold a press conference this afternoon. He'll meet reporters at his Florida resort, Mar-a-Lago. Stocks opened higher this morning as the Labor Department reported a drop in new applications for unemployment benefits. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average jumped about 550 points in early trading.
New claims for unemployment benefits fell by 17,000 last week, reversing a jump the previous week. That jump was one of the factors that rattled investors and contributed to a big stock market sell-off, which continued at the start of this week. The weekly unemployment numbers can be volatile, but today's report may offer some reassurance to those who are worried about the health of the U.S. job market. Stock in Eli Lilly jumped this morning after the drug maker projected higher profits for the year. Lilly sold more than $1 billion worth of its popular weight loss drug Zepbound during the most recent quarter. Sales of a sister drug for treating diabetes more than tripled, topping $3 billion. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
You're listening to NPR News. Concert organizers canceled 3 shows in Vienna, Austria for pop star Taylor Swift. This was after they learned of a suspected plot to attack the events. Austrian authorities have arrested 2 suspects. A new study of 1 Montana county shows that people living in rural areas call 911 more often than people in cities do during heat waves. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports local officials plan to use that study to help those residents cool off.
Missoula County has one of the state's largest cities, but is largely rural. University of Montana researchers mapped 911 calls during heat waves. They found rural areas had higher rates of emergency calls. The study notes that many in those communities don't have access to air conditioning. Residents also tend to be older, making them vulnerable to heat. Adrian Beck leads the county's emergency services. She plans to use this information to help people in those communities.
It may be as simple as knocking on their door and saying, you know, would you benefit from an air conditioner? How can we connect you with resources to make that happen?
She also hopes to deploy paramedics to check on vulnerable people during extreme heat. For NPR News, I'm Aaron Bolton in Missoula, Montana.
The U.S. Olympic team has named the flag bearers for the closing ceremonies for the Paris Summer Games. Their 14-time Olympic swimming medalist, Katie Ledecky, and Olympic gold medal rower, Nick Mead. The closing ceremonies for the Olympics will be held this Sunday. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Oracle. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure is a platform for database, application development, and AI, designed to provide cloud services wherever users need it. Learn more at oracle.com/radio.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The American Red Cross is facing an emergency blood shortage after the national supply fell by more than 25% since July 1st. The organization said Monday that extreme temperatures and oppressive heat waves impacted almost 100 blood drives last month in almost every state where the Red Cross collects blood. The weather affected turnout at the events or forced organizers to cancel them. Joining us now is Pam Downey from the Red Cross with more. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, you know, normally in the summer, blood drives do slow down, but this is a really significant drop. Can you tell us about more about this impact and why the Red Cross issued this emergency alert?
Well, as you stated, you know, we have the hurricanes that have come through. We had Hurricane Beryl, then we have Hurricane Debbie coming through. With those hurricanes, people tend, you know, blood drives are canceled. We have less people coming out to donate. If they are able to donate in those areas. In addition to all that, we have the summer travel and the summer activities that compound that. And then on top of that, we also, our biggest collections are our schools, our high schools, our colleges, and those are out at this time as well. So it has had a great impact, as you said. We're down 25% since July with a shortfall of more than 19,000 blood donations in July.
Let's explain to folks what this actually means in terms of the day-to-day for folks at a hospital, for instance, or a place where they're going to need that blood. What does this do to the supply?
So what it does is it puts people – basically the list of how you can receive those blood donations that are needed. You know, the patients might have to be put on hold to receive their treatment. They're kind of put in a line of what's more important over another, which is something we never want to have to do.
And at the same time of this shortage, hospital demand for blood, it remains strong, and there's actually an inventory of a particular type that's very low, type O. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Right now, the type O is low. It is a vital blood type that we do need. We need those O negative and O positive bloods readily available to help in those emergency situations. Type O positive is the most transfused blood type in the U.S. right now. O negative is our universal blood type, which is what we use in our emergency rooms when there is no time to determine what blood type a patient needs.
And also type O is especially important for victim in accidents or other trauma.
Yes, that is correct.
So folks that need emergency treatment really need this, and it's at a critical low area right now.
It's and the only way we get those is from our generous blood donors. So we really need those O negative to come out and donate so that we can, you know, treat the critical patients as they come in.
How is the Red Cross working with hospitals to meet the blood needs of its patients?
Well, we do it with the generosity of our donors. That is really what we're asking for. We're looking for everybody to, if they can, to go out and make an appointment. You can go to redcrossblood.org to schedule. Basically, the blood isn't coming in fast enough. So we need the donors to come in and donate to keep that supply up.
And Red Cross is trying to incentivize folks to come in. How are you trying to get folks to come in August?
Right now, we have a $20 Amazon e-gift card. So when donors come in, have a valid email address, and that $20 e-gift card will get emailed to them in about 2 to 4 weeks.
And you guys have a list of upcoming blood donation opportunities throughout the Hudson Valley throughout the month of August, and just want to highlight a few of them. There's one in Monroe in Orange County on August 15th. In Sullivan County, there's one in Jeffersonville at St. George's Church on the 14th, in Monticello the 22nd, also Wurtsboro on the 14th. In Ulster, there's one in Highland on the 16th, in Ellenville on the 29th. And again, you can find out where all of these are in multiple locations across the Hudson Valley for donations. If you're listening to us in Northeast Pennsylvania, you can also find locations there, redcrossblood.org. Pam, you're also, as the Red Cross, not only working to overcome the blood shortage, you're also providing food and shelter for folks affected by, as you mentioned, the hurricanes, but also those wildfires out west.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, so you're a bit strained. Are you hopeful that folks will step up?
Yes, yeah, so we have several campaigns locally that are going on. We're working with Hoffman's Car Wash. They're taking donations from donors as they come in. We're also working with Storch. They're helping to take donations coming in too for the next 2 months to help out with the other aid that the Red Cross is providing. Like you said, the food in the shelters with the hurricanes and wildfires in the West.
Yeah, I mean, American Red Cross, known for the blood drives, but you guys do so many other things, shelter, food, and other services. So it's vital to keep all of it going. So if folks can donate again for the blood drives during this national blood emergency, go to redcrossblood.org. There's even a blood donor app, right?
Yes, there is. It's actually great. If you're an existing donor, you just take your donor ID and you put it in. It's a great tool. It allows you to schedule your donations. You can see where your blood goes, which I find is amazing. They don't give you all the details, but they give you just enough. For example, one of the last ones that I received, it went to a child in Connecticut, so which is great. It also holds your donor card for you. It tells you your blood type. You can just go to redcrossblood.org and you can look at the app, or just go to the app store and download it from there.
And in addition to folks volunteering to donate blood, you're also looking for volunteers and even to have folks host a blood drive. Where can they get that information as well and learn more?
So if they go to redcrossblood.org, on the top line, there's a spot for more about blood drives. They can go there. They can submit a request online and it'll go to the appropriate people and we can get things going. Typically we book about 6 months out, but we always have some gaps in and around, to help take care. And we always have, like we said, there are things that cancel. So, you know, hopefully we can find dates for everybody and get it going. But that's, you know, go to redcrossblood.org and enter in an inquiry to host a blood drive.
That's Pam Downey from the Red Cross talking to us about the emergency blood shortage and how you can help. The national supply fell by 25% in July. Pam, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, are you a fish head? If you're not, you might encounter a few thousand of them this weekend. They're descending upon Bethel Woods for a three-day residency. We'll find out more about it after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
Hi, Ira Flatow here from Science Friday. We view Sci-Fry as a refreshing break from the daily bombardment of political news. You know, there's lots of important and interesting science and technology out there. Whether it's the deep, dark mysteries of the universe or your deep, dark microbiome, it's all right here. So start your weekends with thought-provoking news on Radio Catskill.
Thursdays at 9, it's Connect the Dots with me, David Christian. It's the freeform show where each song leads to the next by way of a musical connection. Think of it as a dive into music's liner notes, exploring the behind-the-scenes connections that show that the distance between genres and decades is often shorter than we think. That's Connect the Dots, Thursday nights at 9, here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The rock band Phish returns to Bethel Woods for a three-night residency this weekend. Thousands of fans will attend the shows at the site of the 1969 Woodstock Festival. And with camping now a part of Bethel Woods' concert season, many of those fans won't be leaving at the end of the night. To give them something to do when Phish is not performing, Bethel Woods has organized a camper's paradise with everything from yoga to movies, a maker's park, and more live music. Peter Negroponte is Bethel Woods' artist in resident and multi-instrumentalist with the band Gorilla Toss. He's curating the additional bands performing at the Phish pre-show activities, and Jason Dole spoke to him yesterday.
At the moment, I'm doing an artist residency. It's been going on for a year and a half. It's going to be a two-year project, and it's incredible. I mean, there's a couple things I do. You know, essentially, I work there. You know, like, so I started there as a teaching artist. So I was teaching classes to kids and adults. Now we do like an adult rock camp that's really cool, like an after work thing, and there's an after school thing for the kids. So I started there as a teaching artist, and then I got involved with the museum, which is an amazing place. And what I do there is I sort of curate small events, and I do pop up events, like pretty much all music. Like I'm a music guy. That's my thing. So that's my main role in the museum. And then, I've been setting up these small shows. They're free. They're usually on Wednesday nights. It's called the Horizon Happy Hour series. And, there's booze, there's food. It's very kid friendly. Like I feel a lot of kids come and there's like, you know, there's kind of a zone for them to run around in, and there's music and the parents seem to like it.
So it's for adults too, but it's like for families. They can bring their kids out and everybody can dig some music.
Yes. It's very family friendly, but it's not for the kids. It's for whoever. It's usually kind of more like, so next week we have Juma Salton coming in. He's the guy that played with Jimi Hendrix at Woodstock. So it's that kind of vibe. It's a lot of jazz and just kind of cool music.
Juma got like a combo, or is he bringing some other folks out on percussion with him? Or?
He has a 10-piece band.
Wow.
Yeah, it's wild. They played last year and it was incredible.
Oh, that's great.
He's the real deal. They're all the real deal.
Okay. Well, you know, off mic, you were telling me I should come out more and check it out. So you're really turning the screws here.
Yeah, come check it
out.
It's free.
You got Juma with a 10-piece band right there at the original Woodstock site.
And the doors are at
5. I guess I got to go.
Yeah, it's you know, doors are at 5. Music starts around 6. It's over by 8 or 9, which is like, you know, it's an early show. It's great. And usually we've pretty much always had perfect weather for my events, which is ironic because things get rained out there pretty often. And so I've been extremely lucky, and it's beautiful. So, you know, the sun sets behind the stage. It's just like, it's a vibe. It's a total vibe, and people seem to like it, and I encourage anybody to come. Yeah.
So, you know, I want to talk about the fact that Phish is coming. It's a big deal when Phish comes, not just for Bethel Woods, but like the whole area, because Phish brings the masses, you know.
They do.
People travel to see them. But I guess we got to get our disclaimers out there. Are you a Phish head, personally?
I'm a fan of the band. I am.
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
It started when I was a teenager. I went and saw a show. I had my, you know, little strange religious experience, and that's all I'll say about that. But, then I've been sort of in and out of it, but yeah, I'm a fan of the band, and for years now.
So as a fan of the band, and I could ask you, and this isn't necessarily in your professional capacity at Bethel Woods, but, you know, as a fan, talking to perhaps non-fans, like, they've been doing this for decades now, almost 40 years.
Yeah.
Like, what, What keeps fans coming back for more? Like, what's the attraction? Why are people going out of their way to see Fish for decade after decade?
So, you know, they're a cult band. And this is what I like to say about Fish. It's sort of like, because the outsider looks in and they're like, some of it is really silly and it's pretty wacky and it's just strange music. And musically, it's very, like, they're very technical. It's advanced. Like, so it's pretty nerdy in a cool way, which I like. And, it's sort of like, it's a bit like there's an inside joke and we're all part of it. You know, and once you're part of it, you're in there and you get it and it becomes really fun. There's lots of like, you know, I don't know. There's just a lot of secret references and stuff you start to understand. And then basically, you know, they always play a different show, which is a big appeal. So it's never the same show twice. That's the Grateful Dead style. They're always switching up their set lists.
A lot of improvisation within the songs that they do.
Yeah, they do, you know, the long psychedelic jams. And I'm personally, at this point, I'm there for the long psychedelic jams. I think that stuff's the most interesting to me. And, you know, I can't think of many other bands that get to improvise on that level in front of so many people. And people like it. They get into it. And I think a lot of people are there to see the jams. They're chasing the jams. And, they're just a cool band. It's hard though. It's like, I don't know if I'm not one to convince somebody to get into Fish. Like,
you're not proselytizing. You're not, you're not being a Fisher of Fish fans.
I know people that do that. I'm not going to try that. It's sort of like, if just come to the show. And if you don't, I think you'll enjoy it. I think it's a spectacle. There's a lot to see. There's an amazing light show. It's kind of a crazy party. And I think anyone can walk away and be like, that was interesting. But yeah, I'm not here to push like it's the greatest band ever.
Well, there's even more party to the party that Fish typically brings at this Bethel Woodstop, because people are going to be camping on site, and you are involved with helping curate the Camper's Paradise. Can you tell us what the Camper's Paradise is?
Okay, the Camper's Paradise is awesome. It's just activities for all the camping people to do when Fish is not playing. And so there's arts and crafts stuff. There's yoga. There's going to be like a room. We're showing movies. I think we're doing like, you know, 2001 Space Odyssey, stuff like that. So that's part of it. And then I'm doing the music part. So I'm curating. There's something called the Horizon Stage. So when you walk into Bethel Woods, it's new from the last couple of years. It's a really cool project. They call it the Emerging Artist Stage as well. So they like to put young bands on there, not in age, but just, you know, bands that aren't emerged fully, whatever that means.
Right. But as you walk in through the main gates and circle around,
you can't miss
that
it.
Little lawn on the right. That's where the Horizon
exactly.
Stage is, right?
You can't miss it. And it's not even a little lawn. It's a big lawn.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty wild experiment. And I think it's been going really well. So a couple years ago when Fish came, my band Gorilla Toss got to play on that stage. And it was amazing. It's an incredible. There's a view of the mountains and the sunsets. It's a total vibe. And then, you know, like, we did pretty well with our set. I thought people came and checked it out. It is kind of like 12,000 people walking by your set to get to their seats. But, you know, some of them come trickle in and enjoy the music. And it's definitely a super unique experience. I can't think of any other venues like Bethel Woods of that size that do anything, you know, like that at all. So it's pretty special.
And that is cool. And then, I mean, as a longtime concert goer, I always, in a sense, feel for or slash appreciate the opening acts, because, and I always wonder, like, so I can ask you as a musician, I mean, I always assume, like, you know, you're there, you're the opener. Maybe not everybody's there to see you. They're there to see something else, but it's an opportunity to see who you catch or whose attention you get, right? Is that kind
exactly.
of how you approach it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think sort of what they're going off of at Bethel Woods is that, I guess what some people don't know is that a lot of bands that played Woodstock back in the day were like, for like Santana, for instance, supposedly he wasn't famous back then. That was kind of.
He was. The movie that came out of the festival is really what broke him nationally.
Exactly. And so his performance there was a big deal. And, you know, it's sort of like, you know, it goes down in rock history as an amazing performance. So based on that kind of thing of just exposing the masses to something they normally wouldn't hear. Based on a sort of Woodstock thing they did.
You know, people forget that we just call it Woodstock, but, you know, it's the Woodstock Music and Art Fair. It was always intended to have more than just what was happening on the main stage. They set up a secondary camping area with a secondary stage for people to play for free or play for the hog farm. So in some ways, the fact that Bethel Woods keeps adding these things, like adding the camping, adding other arts activities that'll go on, in some ways that kind of ties back to the old original vision of the Woodstock Festival too.
It totally does. Yeah. I think a lot of people think of, you know, Hendrix and the Who and all that stuff, which is all incredible. But a lot was going on at Woodstock. It wasn't, like you said, there was the small stage. It's called the free stage. We actually have that right now in the basement of the museum. We've replicated the free stage, and I throw shows on there sometimes, which another thing I do. But yeah, it's a whole, exactly art. It's not just music. There's art and just freaky stuff. And it's going to be great for the campers. I think they're going to love it. I really do. Other than the rain, I think they're going to love, you know, the whole experience.
And could you talk about some of the who you're going to have on stage, what people are going to see if they come?
I'd love to. It's awesome because a lot of these people are colleagues and friends and musicians who I really admire and respect, who I've sort of come up with over the years. So I was really happy to get some of them on the stage. On Friday, there's a guy called Frank Hurricane. Incredible storyteller. He's just like, I can't really describe what he does. You have to just see it. It's just incredible. And I booked him at Bethel Woods twice now, actually, and he seems to go over well. Actually, sorry, just once. This is the second time. But people like him around here. So he's opening, you know, quote unquote, opening on Friday.
We had Frank on here on Radio Catskill.
Yeah,
on
you did.
With Aldo, and I think we played some of that interview on the local edition, too. So
yes.
Dedicated listeners maybe remember Frank Hurricane. Really cool guy.
I remember that now. Yeah, because I booked that show that day. He came in. So that was really cool of you guys to have him because he's incredible. So that's the first thing on Friday. And then the after show, this is really something that I think is super awesome, is a new band. It's called Winged Wheel. And it's sort of it's collective of just pretty cool heavy hitter, kind of underground experimental musicians. And the drummer is Steve Shelley from Sonic Youth, which is incredible. I'm a huge Sonic Youth fan. So friggin' Steve Shelley from Sonic Youth is playing after Fish on Friday night. I'm extremely pleased to combine those worlds. And it's wild, right?
I'm in disbelief, you know? And I'm just like, people keep asking, like, you're going to go see Fish? You can see, I'm like, no. But people said to me, you're going to see Steve Shelley play after Fish? It's like, geez, it's really getting tempting then. That's amazing.
It's pretty friggin' cool. Yeah. I'm so happy to have gotten to book him. And that show's going to be really fun. It's an after show. It's the first time they've ever done an after show really at all. And it's on that stage within the venue. It's a wild idea. I'm extremely grateful for them allowing me to do this. It's a lot of work goes into this. So a lot of people are putting a lot of work so I can throw some parties. And, it's an honor. But I do think it's going to be a unique experience for the campers, and they're going to walk away being like, you know, this is the coolest place ever. Hopefully that's the goal. So that's Friday. Saturday, Johnny Cosmo is playing before Fish on the Horizon stage. He's another old friend. He makes amazing music. Check him out. He's on Spotify and all that stuff. He's got a ton of listeners. He's kind of underground famous. I love him. He's an LA guy. Incredible. He's 10-piece band, horns, singers, everything. And then we're going to do the after show, Gorilla Toss, my band, we're playing after. And then we're also playing Sunday as well before Fish. I got very lucky to do two slots, which is, so we're doing that.
Curator's privilege.
Well, honestly, yes, totally. But one of my guys at Bethel, the manager, he was like, you guys got to play, you know, every single one of them. And I'm like, well, that's a great idea. I appreciate that. But yeah, I wanted to book some other bands. But yeah, we get to play twice, which is a privilege, of course. Yeah, we're stoked. We're so psyched.
This is happening this weekend. I can't believe you even had enough time to come out here in studio in person. You must be very busy right now.
I'm extremely busy. Everyone's extremely busy. And you know what? While I'm sitting here, I'm going to plug another show that's tomorrow night. Is it cool if I do this? This is unrelated to Bethel Woods.
All right, yeah.
It's at Memories. Have you heard about Memories?
Yeah.
So we're doing a little, like a very unofficial pre-Fish party where Gorilla Toss is playing tomorrow at Memories. And Jamie Smith, who's local. OFS is playing, their local band. City and Forest, an amazing local band. Jamie Smith, who's local. And then Johnny Cosmo, who's also doing the Fish Weekend, is performing. And then Gorilla Toss is playing last. It starts at 6 p.m. and it is free. And it's going to be incredible. Yeah, there's stuff happening right now. And we're all trying to make it happen in Sullivan County. And it's going well, I think. People come out now.
And this is on Thursday night that you're talking about in Parksville. And we're recording this a day before it airs. So that's tonight as people are hearing this.
Awesome.
That's going to be tonight in Parksville. And then tomorrow's when things start with Fish in Bethel Woods. Is there anything else about what you've got lined up or what your colleagues have lined up for people this weekend at Fish that you want to let them know?
Well, there's going to be arts and crafts. There's yoga. Oh, I forgot to include, this is very important, is that at this is another awesome thing that we're doing, is that at noon on Saturday and Sunday, We are going to throw out, there's going to be a Grateful Dead cover band called Owsley's Owls. They're fantastic. They're actually from Massachusetts. They're traveling all the way here for the gig. They're going to perform on the Woodstock site on the field. So we're doing that. And then Callie Seastrand, who's also a very local musician. I feel like she's been in here before.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. She's great. And she, I also work with her at Bethel Woods. She's a teaching artist. She's also performing Saturday. And so, yeah, yet another musical thing that we're doing that's extremely unique and special. And then, yeah, like I said, arts and crafts, yoga, movies, just like everything. It's going to be insane.
Yeah, there's even a schedule for some of the stuff with wellness hours in the morning from 9 to 11 with yoga and more. The Sleeping Monkey Lounge from 10 in the morning to 2 p.m.
It's a fish reference.
With communal art making, film screenings, a space to relax. The Creativity Zone going from 11 to 3. A makerspace for all ages. And then, like you said, live music performances on the original historic Woodstock field. That's not just unique, that's rare. Like, that doesn't happen much because it's a preserved historic site and most of the performances happen in other places in the ground. So when there's live music actually right there on that field, that's always a special thing.
It's pretty wild. I don't know the last time they did that. But, you know, there's not a huge stage. It's a small production, but it's going to be incredible. There's going to be people dancing on the site and music. And it's going to be wild.
You know, we talked a little bit about like some of the connections, some of the echoes to the original Woodstock Spirit Ethos Festival, and that this is reminiscent of some of that. People travel to see Phish all over the place. You know, they go far and wide. Does this resonate at all with the Phish fans or even the band that they're playing the original Woodstock site? Does that add anything to it?
Yeah, I think people are psyched that it's the Woodstock site for sure. I know the band, I think every time the band comes, which has only been two times, and one of them was 2012, the other time was 2022, they did, you know, they played Fire by Hendrix and they did the Star Spangled Banner and all that stuff. And then, yeah, there's excitement. It's freaking Woodstock. Yeah, I think people are psyched. I think that, you know, like the vibes are there and it's a beautiful, you've been there. It's like it's landscaped, like it's incredible. It's just, it's one of the most beautiful venues I've ever been to by far. And you go, you know, you stand over the site and you see the field and the sun and it's beautiful. Yeah. I think people are psyched and they're going to go check it out. Yeah.
There's more information at BethelWoodsCenter.org. I just happened to bring it up. And the very first thing that pops up is everything we just talked about. The Wellness Hours, the Sleeping Monkey Lounge.
Awesome.
Camper's Paradise pop up right when you first get the website. So all the information is right there. And we've been talking to artists in residence at Bethel Woods, Peter Negroponte. Thank you so much for coming out here.
Thanks so much for having me. This was so fun.
Oh, great.
Yeah, anytime.
Jason Dole there. And Jason Dole came out of the Sleepy Monkey Lounge to join us live this morning in the studio. Hey.
Hey there.
Thanks. Good. Thanks for bringing us that report. Also wanted to talk about other stuff that's coming up next week at Bethel Woods. It's the anniversary of Woodstock.
Yeah, the Woodstock anniversary rolls around every year. And next weekend is kind of like the anniversary weekend. So we'll be doing stuff on air here to celebrate that and reflect on this amazing history that we have right here in our listening area.
So we'll have some special reports for the 55th anniversary of the Woodstock Festival. One of those we wanted to highlight, really cool. You're going to be talking to the folks over there about the mud.
I'm digging into it. I'm really, we're getting into it.
We're going to have a special report on the soil and mud at Woodstock.
Yeah, I thought it was a fun way to approach the history, but it's like a river runs through it. A river of mud kind of runs through the Woodstock story, and it has major impacts on the experience of those who went there and the legacy of the event, too. And, Dr. Hitch, the director of the museum, was so excited when I said I want to talk about mud that he brought out all these artifacts covered in mud, and we talked about them. And so that's the sort of thing that we're going to hear.
This is the kind of investigative journalism this area needs and requires. Thank you for
mud
that.
Mud-racking.
You're breaking news, mud-breaking. Mud-racking? Mud-breaking.
Mud-racking.
Breaking. It took me a minute. Jason Dole with a special report, not only on that, but other reports next week as we celebrate the 55th anniversary of the Woodstock Festival of Music and Arts. That's next week here on Radio Chatskill. Thanks, Jason. You know where they're also going to be studying some mud and other biodiversity? Well, the Upper Delaware Bio Blitz. That's coming up, and we'll talk to Stephen Schwartz right after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
Hi, this is Jeff, your host on Radio Catskill's show, Electric Mountain. I'll be playing a choice selection of house, techno, electro, and a whole lot more. And every week, I'll feature a guest DJ spinning a continuous set, bringing their unique style. Come dance with us on Electric Mountain, each and every Saturday night, 12 to 2, exclusively done on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
You're with Radio Chatskill. Every few years, scientists and volunteers descend on the Upper Delaware River Basin for a BioBlitz, which compiles a 24-hour snapshot of life on a particular parcel of land as an indicator of the biodiversity in the area. The Upper Delaware BioBlitz is designed to increase public awareness about the variety of life in our immediate neighborhood and to get kids excited about science. Here to tell us about the latest BioBlitz and the Highlights Foundation in Damascus Township that happened this summer is Stephen Schwartz from the Upper Delaware BioBlitz. Stephen, welcome back.
Hi, Tim. Good to be here.
Good to have you here. Now, we had you on in advance of the BioBlitz, but just let's remind folks again what the BioBlitz is, how it works.
So the BioBlitz is an event where eight teams of scientists and amateur naturalists gather on a property for 24 hours to collect, identify, and catalog every single unique living species they can find. And this year, the event took place on June 28th and 29th at the Highlights Foundation Retreat Center in Boyd's Mills, Pennsylvania.
It's kind of like a science all-nighter. You guys did that in June, and you got some results from that. What were some of the highlights from this year's BioBlitz?
Well, this year's BioBlitz was maybe the best ever. We've done five previously, so this would have been the sixth BioBlitz. And we had great teams of scientists. We had great public participation. We had lots of kids, which is always our goal. And the results are coming in. The preliminary results at the end of the event, the ones that were posted, were that we found 720 unique species. So bugs always leads the way. This year they had about 350 species at the conclusion of the event. But some of the species are what they call vouchered, which are they are taken back to their labs and are closely identified under microscopes, because some species you have to get in close and personal to count the number of thorax segments or the number of pieces of the feelers or whatever. So the results are preliminary. We expect the full results, the final results, to take place in the next few weeks as each of the teams confirms what they found. And I fully expect we'll end up with more species than the 720 our preliminary results. The other unique thing that happened this year for the first time is that we had some funding that allowed us to do eDNA. So that's a new technique that scientists are rolling out into the field, where they take a sample of something, maybe water from a stream or soil or even air. And in that sample, they're able to analyze all the fragments of all the DNA of all the critters that have been there. So in the case of the BioBlitz, we took some water samples from the creeks, and they've been analyzed through eDNA, and we'll be able to know what species lived or even walked through the stream upstream of where the samples were taken.
You mentioned there were 720 species identified so far. You expect that number to rise. Is that a high number to find during a BioBlitz like this?
The number ranges every BioBlitz. It depends on the site, and it depends on the composition of the teams. One year we had like an incredible dragonfly team from upstate New York, who spend their life going from site to site just focusing on dragonflies. This year we had Dr. John Gelhaus from the Academy of Natural Sciences, whose specialty is crane flies. And when we get his results, there could be as many as 50 unique species of crane flies, which is a big family, but, you know, it's that's his specialty. So it kind of depends on the composition of the teams. It depends on the site and you know, sometimes the weather.
Yeah. What happened with the acoustic monitoring of bats this year? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. We often do a nighttime pop-up event, and it usually includes acoustic monitoring for bats, and also the scientists set up sheets with bright lights on them to attract moths and other light-attracting insects. And so we had both of those things going. The bat people have these basically iPads that are attached to directional microphones, and they can hear the sounds that bats make that we can't hear. And the software in the iPads analyzes it and can identify unique species. So I'm not sure how many species of bats we found, but I was out there, and they heard them, even though we couldn't see them or hear them.
How many different types of species of bats are there?
Oh, there are a bunch. Typically, there are about four or five common species in the upper Delaware, but there could be as many as 10 or 12.
Oh, wow. And I'm sure that after, you know, doing this for 24 hours and all of the different species you discovered and are still identifying, you've got to have a few good stories from this year's event. Can you share a few?
I know that the fish team was very excited. Usually our BioBlitzes have taken place on the Delaware River itself, and they'll find maybe 20 or 23 species of fish. This year, it was on a tributary, the north branch of the Calkins Creek, and we didn't expect to find all the river fish, you know, where you can find sea run shad and lampreys and things like that. But they were very excited to find, I think it was 10 species in the little creek that was part of the site.
And again, let's remind folks about why it's so important to, you know, we talked about how this is an educational opportunity, and we'll talk a little bit about that, but just to, like, reemphasize why it's important to have a BioBlitz like this to find it and identify as many species as possible in this one specific area over a short period of time.
Well, the BioBlitz creates a snapshot of biodiversity, and that's important to have because you know, things change, and we can see in the future what we found in the past. We can do it in the context of all of the species that were found there, and a lot of the species found in the BioBlitz rely on each other. So it's important to know that. It's also important that a lot of field research takes place in the upper Delaware, and it takes place by the USGS, the Park Service, universities, but it's usually looking at very specific questions, the types of mussels or snails or turtles that are found here. And some of that research is never really published. It sits in people's drawers. So all of the data that is collected during the BioBlitz is published publicly and will be available for future use by anyone that wants to take a look at the collection.
As you're still cataloging everything and processing the data, when do you expect that to be available to folks publicly?
I think it'll be available in the next few weeks. Tanya Dopke from the Academy of Natural Sciences is the science lead for the BioBlitz, and she's been talking to all the teams and reports back that she's close to having final results. Another important goal of the BioBlitz is to introduce kids to field science. What happens in the field? They get to meet scientists as they do the work, see how it's done, see how they take the specimens that they've found, and take a look at them, and they get to look through microscopes and get down and into science in the field as it happens.
So can you tell us a little bit about the reaction you had from some of the kids at the BioBlitz here at the Highlights Foundation property in June?
the kids always get really excited, and the scientists get excited that the kids are excited. It's kind of a symbiotic relationship. A number of the scientists have been at each and every one of the BioBlitzes. They love coming back. They love doing it in a public setting, and the excitement of doing it within a 24-hour period also is part of the fun. And the kids just love to go out there and poke at things, see things. There are tanks with the fish in them. There are terrariums with the bugs or the turtles in them. They get to see the sheets at night with like thousands of bugs on them, and watch the scientists basically suck the bugs off into collection vials for later analysis. You know, it's something that you don't see every day, and the kids just love it. There were all kinds of art and music activities for the kids. They got to journal. They got to write poetry. They got to construct caddisflies to understand what caddisflies do in the environment, and participate in all kinds of activities.
How many BioBlitzes have you participated in, Stephen?
So this was the sixth. We started in 2013. We've done four. We had previously done four public events like this one. And then the pandemic came along. So in 21, we did what we called the virtual BioBlitz, where each of the teams had 24 hours on a property to go and do their work. But they weren't doing it all at the same time. You know, the mushroom team would love to do the BioBlitz in the fall when there are lots of mushrooms. In 21, they got to do it in the fall. In 21, the bird team would love to do it during migration in the spring, so they got to do it early in the spring. But it was not a public event. They did the work on their own. We published it. We had some web presentations afterwards. But it wasn't a event where everybody was out there together. And this year and the four previous public events were really a festival of science.
And as we mentioned, the BioBlitz is a 24-hour snapshot of life on a particular piece of land. After doing these for a few years now, do you have any particular tract of land you've got your eye on, thinking, oh, I need to know about this area and the biodiversity there?
Well, we ask people, property owners, to volunteer their land, and there are a number of properties that are interested in doing future BioBlitzes. We'd love to do one in 2 years on the New York side of the river, because it's been a while since we did that. The last one in New York was a 10-mile river in 2016, and what we're looking for is a property that has a lot of biodiversity. It has uplands, lowlands, wetlands, meadows, deciduous forests, evergreen forests, and encompasses all of the habitats that we have in the Upper Delaware. So, if you have a site that you'd like to propose for 2026, let us know. And you can always contact us through the website, which is Upper Delaware, or Facebook or Instagram.
Yeah, we kind of lost you there. The website is upperdelawarebioblitz.com, and also on Facebook, social media, Instagram as well. And that's also where folks will be able to find the results once everything's published?
Yes, we'll publish all the results and include the spreadsheets so you can see the individual species and the first occurrences, the first time those species have been identified in Wayne County in the next few weeks.
And, you know, these BioBlitzes happen all across the country. Do you participate in other BioBlitzes?
The BioBlitz that I participated in that gave us the idea to do one in Wayne County has taken place for probably 20, 25 years in Pike County, in Monroe County. The Monroe County Conservation District has a BioBlitz every 2 years, and a number of us went to the event in 2012 and gave us the idea that we could do one here, and also gave us the idea that it should encompass music and art and food and all of the things that help make this a great place to live.
Yeah. We've been talking to Stephen Schwartz of the Upper Delaware Bio Blitz about the 24-hour blitz that took place at the end of June at the Highlights Foundation property in Damascus Township in Wayne County. Again, there's more information about the Bio Blitz at upperdelawarebioblitz.com. Stephen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Tim.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, stick it around in Wayne County because there are two new exhibits coming up at the Wayne County Arts Foundation. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi will have more after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
On last week's Wait, Wait, Peter Grose made a plea to find our common humanity.
There are people who need cocaine, and there are people flushing cocaine down the toilet.
We have to find a way to get these people together, or else what are we doing on this planet?
I'm Peter Sagal. Join us as we broadcast this week from Wolf Trap in Northern Virginia, which is as close as we want to go to Washington, D.C. That's Wait, Wait from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Callison Stratton, a singer-songwriter, public historian, and host of Liberation Station here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Liberation Station is a show that highlights the work of female and femme-presenting performers across genre and time. It's my little way of balancing the scales of representation on the radio. Join me for Liberation Station every Saturday evening at 7 p.m., only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Wayne County Arts Alliance has two new exhibits coming up. Idle Hours opens tomorrow, Friday, August 9th, and then Essence of Elements number 2, a WCAA members-themed group exhibit, opens next Friday, August 16th. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi spoke to Jay Hostetler, co-curator of the WCAA galleries, about both exhibits.
Good morning, Jay, and welcome back to Radio Chatskill.
Thank you for inviting me, Valerie. Certainly appreciate you giving me a call and having me speak about our events at the Wayne County Arts Alliance Gallery.
Well, you have two, the first of which is Friday, August 9th. The opening is from 5 to 10 p.m., in Honesdale at the Wayne County Arts Alliance, and it's entitled Idle Hours. Tell us about Idle Hours.
Yes, Idle Hours is actually our second members-curated exhibition in our gallery. Debbie Pollock and I are the co-curators and have been for the last 3 years, and we decided let's invite the members to curate their own show and do what we do as curators. Because we don't want to hog all the fun. It's part of hanging a show and going through the submissions is part of the fun that Debbie and I enjoy. And Idle Hours is being curated by Dan Nelson, who owns Happy Tattoo on Main Street in Honesdale, right next to our gallery. And he proposed an exhibition to us last year of tattoo artists. I mean, when you think of tattoos, it is body art. And what Dan had mentioned is that many of the tattoo artists also do fine art. So we were very interested and excited about having a new exhibition based on the tattoo artist's visions. So this exhibition has 36 pieces of artwork. We've got some neon sign work as well from an artist in New York City, Wayne Heller. And so it's an exciting show because it covers almost all of the visual arts, ceramics, pencil drawings, copper etching prints, photography, acrylic and oil paintings. So it's a pretty inclusive show.
And the tattoo artists are just a part of it.
That's correct. And in addition to them showing their art, This coming weekend on August 10th and August 11th, the tattoo artists who have work in the show will be actually doing tattoos on the second floor of the gallery. So it's going to be a tattoo palooza at the Wayne County Arts Alliance.
The title, Idle Hours, how did that come up?
It's kind of explained in from Dan in his press release, because he said, you know, like tattoo artists, like most traditional trades, that they work hard and they work one-on-one. They're hyper-focused. It's pretty intense work when you're actually tattooing on someone's body.
Yeah.
And so these particular tattoo artists also want to pursue fine art. And so he's gathered them together, and they represent cities from, let me see, he told me his cities, from Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Ann Arbor, Michigan, Taos, New Mexico, and New York City. So we've covered a lot of territory in terms of the art that's in the exhibition.
I really am intrigued and can't wait to get to see it.
Exactly. I just think of tattoo artists just doing tattoos, but, you know, it is all original art, and that's what's in the gallery, too. Exactly. And that's what's unique, I think, about these nine tattoo artists who are in the exhibition, is that every tattoo they do is original art. They don't borrow. They don't find other tattoos that have been done before. It's all original work, which I just found very fascinating.
And following that, this is the following weekend, I believe, correct? August 16th?
Exactly.
You have a show that'll be on through October 6th with an opening reception on Friday, August 16th, and that's called Essence of Elements 2. And what is that?
The essence of elements that we're talking about are earth, air, fire, and water. We thought this would be a perfect exhibition for this area and this community, because so many people enjoy the outdoors, especially in the summer and the fall months. And so we wanted to showcase an artist's perception of what they think of art when it comes to the earth, the air, fire, and water, those essential elements for us. And again, it was quite a huge response to our submission request, and we've got a great representative body of work that will be opening, like you mentioned, on Friday, August the 16th, and that's running through October the 6th. And that's going to be in our members gallery on the second floor. And if somebody wants to view our member artists' work, they can go to WayneCountyArtsAlliance.org. That's one word, WayneCountyArtsAlliance.org.
Thank you.
Thank you, Valerie. I really enjoy our conversations.
That's culture reporter Valerie Manzi speaking to the co-curator of the Wayne County Arts Alliance Galleries, Jay Hosteller. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. Stay connected to Radio Catskill by signing up for our newsletter. It'll appear weekly in your inbox with local news, culture, and more. You can sign up at wjffradio.org. While you're there, check out the One Small Step initiative we're doing with StoryCorps. Again, wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from The Furniture Restore, located on Main Street in Jeffersonville, specializing in antique and vintage furniture, rugs, art, and lighting, because buying well-made and pre-owned is a better choice for the planet. Online at therestorejayville.com. And from The River Reporter, the community newspaper serving four counties along the Delaware River in Pennsylvania and New York, riverreporter.com. And from listeners like you.
Can two people with different political beliefs still have a meaningful conversation? I'm Ronald Kelson, and I'm working with Radio Catskill on StoryCorps' One Small Step, bringing strangers and our community together, one conversation at a time. We are having conversations in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania all year long, and you should be a part of it. Sign up now at wjffradio.org.
StoryCorps is one small step, and the radio station hubs are made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill. Today's weather, cloudy, cool, a couple of showers, a high 65. Tonight, overcast with a couple of showers late, not much cooler, only a low of 63. And then tomorrow, we'll get soaked by tropical rainstorm Debbie's remnants, a high of 73, but nice and less humid for the weekend. Sunny, 76 Saturday, 71 Sunday. It's 11 o'clock.